This hour of Overdrive, powered by The Source. For expert advice on the very best holiday gifts, visit The Source and chat with one of their tech experts. The show with the hottest takes.
This felt like one of those back in September, let's circle a date, you know, stick up for Kawhi type of manufactured moves, and it's a part of the courting process.
Sure.
And I think it's a smart move.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Wow, this song is a little bit deceiving for myself. Not feeling all right. I'm happy Dave Festruck's in here from The Star. What's up, Dave? How you doing, man?
I'm glad I could make you happy.
Yes, you generally do.
But you're not feeling well.
Well, it's been a rough day for me because my day got off to a horrible start. I got duped by Manchester United. I don't know if you heard the news that Jose Mourinho is out.
That's global news.
Right, it's huge.
As big as it gets.
Well, that's the most valuable franchise in the world, last time I checked.
It definitely is.
If it's not, I mean, it's right there with the Cowboys, I guess. There's a couple in Real Madrid, but Manchester United's real close to the most valuable franchise in the world, right?
It's got to be.
So I take things too literally, and I jumped on Twitter this morning. I got up, and we looked for the elf, and...
Of course, the elf on the shelf.
You got to find the elf. It's very important stuff. And we were kind of having breakfast, and then I have a bit of a routine that once we've kind of settled down, I'm like, all right, I'm going to jump on Twitter, see if I missed anything last night, check my emails. And someone had sent me a note, because I don't follow Manchester United, and if you follow the show, you know I don't profess to be Mr. Soccer or anything like that. Familiar with United, I actually watched their match on Sunday against Liverpool. They got crushed. It wasn't
absolutely
even close.
Crushed.
And Liverpool's a great side. I believe they're first in the table.
I like that.
First in the table over in the Premiership. But some guy sent this to me that Mourinho is out. And I thought he had quit based on the way that they phrased it.
Of course. Because he's left the club.
Yes. United writes, quote, Manchester United has announced that Jose Mourinho has left the club.
I love that. Left the club.
Like, what the hell does that mean? Why is it so ambiguous? Like, I thought that was literal. Like, he said, I'm out of here. This team is garbage, and I quit.
Well, as you just pointed out by pointing out that the Liverpool is first in the table, they have different ways of saying things on that side of the pond.
Right.
And left the club is a euphemism for got canned.
Right. We told him you have to leave.
Or as they like to say in England, was sacked.
Yes.
Jose Mourinho was sacked.
Which, again, I took that literally, and I'm like, someone sacked this guy on the way out the door.
Yes, exactly.
Like he got bagged on the
like
way out.
Like it was a serious, violent incident.
Right.
And the man's poor, yes.
Right. That seemed a little bit more uncalled for, quite frankly. But big news over there. Jose Mourinho left the club.
I loved, you know, he's one of those guys you just love following because even if I'm like you, like I'm not Mr. Soccer. I like the World Cup. I will watch a Premiership match if it happens to be on. I love kind of tuning into the BBC just to get the weekly update of what's going on because half of the way they talk, right? You know, these guys need a result, which is supposed to mean a win, but a result is also a loss.
Could be any result.
It could be a tie.
Could be anything.
But they need a result. I get it. So that's one of my favorite things, but... But this guy, Jose Mourinho is a world-class character. Like, he understands that coaching is as much about X's and O's as it's about theater, and it's about the soap opera. And this guy, he fed the soap opera machine better than anybody fed
the
soap opera machine.
All the time. And he'll find another gig. I mean, he's had too much winning on his resume, and, you know, he won with Chelsea, and... I think he was at Madrid for a while. I mean, I don't know his whole history, but I know who he is, and that says something, that he is a character, and he's on his way out. But you're right. Instant credibility if you have a British accent talking about that sport. You could honestly have no idea what you're talking about, but I just assume it's brilliant analysis.
Next time the World Cup comes on, I'm actually going to do a piece about, like, if you want to make a career as a soccer broadcaster, like, how you basically need an English accent or a Scottish accent. You have to be Irish, English, Scottish, or Wales, I think. I don't know if there's another accent that will do. Maybe heavy Italian. Maybe some heavy Italian
accent.
That's
true.
That could
maybe
work, but you don't hear it as much.
No, you really don't. I mean, you look at our panel here. These guys do an incredible job, but Luke and KJ are both British, and Stephen Caldwell is Scottish.
Right.
And they do a great job.
They do a great job.
But it sounds like they're just... it's off the charts analysis because totally. It's so British. And I guess they put a bit of a Canadian spin on it, but I don't even want that spin. I want to leave the broadcast kind of being confused, but feeling like, okay, I'm in the know now.
Yeah.
Just based on the accent alone.
You feel smarter having listened to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it sounds smarter.
Like, does that apply with Canadian accents
in
hockey?
We don't sound smart. We sound
dumb.
I don't
think we do either.
Like, the Mike Babcock accent does not sound smart.
We have the softest accent in the world. Like, the softest. Everyone knows a Canadian that moves over to Britain, moves over to England, and within, like, weeks, they're picking up on that accent.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you lose your Canadian accent almost immediately when you go over there. But if you grew up anywhere else in the world and you come here, you don't lose anything.
No.
Like, if you grew up in London, England, you come here 30 years later, you still sound like you were living in London, England.
That is so true.
We have the softest accent.
It's so true. It's very true.
Which is fun, I guess.
And because we don't ask people to blend in. But I think it would be fun. Like, wouldn't it be hilarious if there, like, I thought this would be a good sitcom plot. Like, you basically get this Texan who loves soccer. And he realizes the only way he's going to make it as a soccer broadcaster is if he pretends to have an English accent. So, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
And, you know, there's actors that can pull that off, right? Like, there are actors who you would never know are British because they can put on an American accent.
See, I think it's easier for them to come this way. That, like, the Americans and the Canadians putting on British accents, a lot of times, I don't know what it is, but it feels, you can pick up on it.
But there's still some talented people that can pull it off.
I guess.
Like, I know, like, I can't do it at all. Like, I have one voice and that's it. Like, I can sound, you know, slightly dumb and a little bit dumber. That's about all I got. But there are people who can put on, like, the Irish and the Scottish and the English. And I just thought, like, basically, I think with broadcast executives in North America, if you want to be a soccer guy, you better put one of those on. Like, you better put a Scottish brogue or a Manchester City. Like, you better figure it out, man. You better sound like a Beatle, a Stone, or you better sound like, you know, the guys from Oasis.
You have to have it. It's got to be on the resume.
You have to have it, man. Like, you can't have a Texas twang talking global soccer.
You can't do it. I totally agree with that.
Is it just? Is it right? You know, does it make any sense?
It's just a fact.
But
it just seems,
it's like, you know, it just doesn't sound right to hear it out of guys like us. Like, for us to be talking about these guys need a result, if Christian Jackson here, that suddenly sounds eloquent.
Right. Like, the Leafs need a result tonight.
Yeah.
But if I say it, people are going to be like, what the hell does that mean?
What does that even mean?
What, pick up a point in overtime and lose? Get a result. But if KJ said it, you'd be like, all right, I know exactly what that means. They need to start moving up the table. They need to start catching Tampa, right? I mean, they have to start doing it.
And Tampa is ruling the table.
Yes, they are ruling the table. And so that's how my day started. And now I'm kind of fighting with people on Twitter about a poll question that is totally irrelevant. It's a hypothetical. It really doesn't matter that much or mean that much. But today is kind of, there's been some MVP talk in the city because Pierre Maguire was on Leafs Lunch yesterday. I think you were on that show.
I was on.
And he suggested that Mitch Marner, if he had a vote today for the MVP in the league, he would hand it to Mitch Marner. I think he was on First Up this morning, and he delved even deeper into the explanation and the X's and O's behind that take. And everyone's always commenting on Kawhi Leonard, you know, and how they feel about Kawhi. And we had Amin El-Hassan on, I think, on Friday from ESPN, who's a pretty big wig with the NBA coverage on ESPN. And he said on Friday, if he had a vote, it'd be going to Kawhi Leonard. So I just posted the poll thinking, okay, maybe at some point we'll bring this up. And I asked people, which player gives Toronto the best chance for an MVP this season? And people are going crazy because I asked, it's either Kawhi Leonard or Mitch Marner. And Kawhi Leonard's running away with it, which I'm not surprised by that because Kawhi, he brings that name, that type of, you know, not expectation, but when he was acquired, everyone knew if he was healthy, he had the capability of being one of the top three or four players in the world.
Yeah.
And when he's healthy, he has performed extremely well. I think the caveat is he's missed 25% of the schedule.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big chunk. I have a fundamental issue with handing a guy an MVP if he misses 25% of the sked.
And then, by the way, during that 25% of the sked, the Raptors are 7-1.
Right.
So that's how valuable he is.
And crushing teams.
Yeah, that's
like
what I mean.
At Golden State, at the Clippers, at the Lakers. Like, good road teams, and they're crushing these teams without him.
You're 100% right.
Now, I personally don't think either guy is going to win it. But it's a hypothetical based on the city that we happen to do radio in. And Marner, you know, a lot of people are responding. They're like, he's not even the MVP on his own team. Okay, I'll grant you Freddie Anderson. I'd probably grant you Morgan Riley. But the fact is, when it comes to the Hart Trophy, there is a prejudice against those positions.
You're right.
They don't win.
Because they get their own award.
They have their own award. So if you honestly think Morgan Riley or Freddie Anderson would get more Hart votes, you haven't been paying attention the past 50 years. It doesn't work that way.
No, it generally doesn't, because you just don't see it. I mean, unless a goaltender is absolutely dominant, a la Carey Price in 2015 when he won, you know, the Vezina, the Lou Marsh as Canada's Athlete of the Year, and the Hart Trophy. I mean, it just doesn't happen very often, right? I think Price was the last goalie to win it. Who was the last defenseman? It was Chris Pronger, right, back in 2000, was the last defenseman to win the Hart Trophy. So, yes, Jose Theodore won it in a bit of a fluke in 02 as a goaltender. But generally,
Hasek won back to back.
Hasek was,
and he deserved it. But you got to go back to like the early 60s, the last time prior to Hasek, a goalie actually won the Hart. Yeah. I love Freddie Anderson. I think as of today, he'd be up for the Vezina. He has a 0% chance of being nominated for the Hart.
Yeah.
He wouldn't even be nominated for the Hart.
Which may or may not make sense. You know, if you really wanted to break it down and go back and reinvent the award. Like for me, goaltenders are probably the most valuable players on most teams. Like, without Freddie Anderson, how do you like their chances, Hayes?
I don't like them.
I don't
and you know what?
Either.
I would apply that to the Oilers. What has happened recently? Yes, Hitchcock is there, but Koskinen all of a sudden looks like a legit goaltender.
Right.
So
show me a good coach is the old saying. Show me a good coach, I'll show you a great goaltender. Right. And we've seen it. Like, we saw it in November, Hayes. We got spoiled. The Leaf fans got spoiled. They had the best 5-on-5 save percentage in the league, right? In November, 950, by far the best in the league. In December, and by the way, they won 10 of 14 games. They were 10-4. In December, they're back to being average. They're like 9-10. So Freddie's kind of taking a dip. And what are they doing? They're floundering. They're not that good. You know, they don't look the cracks in the defense get exposed. You can't outscore all your problems suddenly, especially when your power play is not really firing on all cylinders. That's why, to me, like, Freddie Anderson is the MVP of the team.
Yes.
Like, if he's not exceptional, I don't see these guys going anywhere.
No, I agree with you. But that is a separate conversation based on the reality of these votes. You know, the Hart Trophy, it doesn't happen.
No, I know.
People don't look at it that way.
My thing is, like, should that be the way it is? And it's a good question.
I think, you know what, honestly, I think it could apply even more so, and it's probably more amplified with the Conn Smythe. You know, was Alex Ovechkin exceptional last year? Absolutely. But once Holtby finally got in and took off,
changed everything.
Eventually, your goalies are going to steal. If you're going to win 16 games in the spring, your goalie probably has to steal two or three.
Yeah.
Steal them. And then another four or five, he was clearly the best player for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could do this every single year and say, all right, this goalie, that goalie. And that's why we have, it doesn't work that way.
You're right. It's not working that way. And it's the same in baseball with the Cy Young and the MVP, you know. They have that conversation as baseball, too. And they say, hey, the pitchers get their own award. Let's try and keep it to position players winning the MVP. And you understand it. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, I thought Pierre, you know, I love Pierre's exuberance. I just think it's a stretch to think Mitch Marner is the MVP of the NHL this season.
No.
As much as I think he might be, in some ways, maybe the most unexpected dominating player. Like, I don't think people saw this kind of domination, even though you could point out, hey, after he got pulled off the fourth line last year, he went on 92-point pace from January 25th on and was pretty dominant, right? And now that he's playing with Tavares, it looks even better. But, man, it's going to be tough to go up against these, you know, this Colorado line that's playing lights out with Antonin.
I think McDavid is
McDavid's always going to be in the conversation.
Yes. If Ovechkin's scores anywhere close to 60, he's going to be in there.
That's what I mean.
And I think McKinnon, you got Jack Eichel. But I think Marner, I said this yesterday, is in the same group as a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, who's been outstanding.
Yeah.
Pasternak, who was brilliant again last night in Montreal. Kucherov, like these really highly skilled wingers who drive their play, their lines. He's in that group, and that those are superstars.
Braden Point's another guy,
Braden
too.
Point's
like,
a guy.
Braden Point, Braden Point is leading the league in primary points at 5-on-5, and Mitch Marner's right behind him. I mean, whatever that means to you, I think it means something, right? Like, it's just, can you create offense 5-on-5? And the answer for those two guys is yes. You know, they're the two best creators of offense in this league 5-on-5 this season. That says something.
It does say something, and probably because we've rattled off so many games, so many names so quickly, it would lead to Kawhi being in a bit of a driver's seat if he played more games. Because, you know, LeBron has really, he had a bit of a slower start, but he's really starting to pick up and heat up. And LeBron's going to get his love because he's on a Lakers team. He's resuscitated the Lakers.
Yep.
They were awful until he got there, and now they're alive. But, you know, the usual suspects, I think Steph Curry's injury kind of takes him out of it. Durant has not been as dominant as he has been in past years. James Harden's been unbelievable recently, but his team has been so bad. Westbrook was dealing with injuries. You know, Giannis is going to be in the conversation, but there aren't, I don't think you can name, you know, 10, 12 guys who might be on the same level. It's a much shorter list, and Kawhi is in there.
I think you hit the nail on the head with LeBron. Like, there's going to be a narrative that forms here, especially if the Lakers keep this up, because it's looking awfully good over there. There's going to be a real push for LeBron, because it's a bit of a history thing. Like, he's got four MVPs, and guess who has five? The great Michael Jordan, right? And there will be a huge lobbying effort to get LeBron his fifth MVP, I really believe. And because, you know, to get him onto that level with Jordan, because it's going to be one of the keys to the GOAT argument, right? The greatest of all time argument is going to be how many MVPs did you win? And I do think LeBron's got is going to have a lot of support to get him to Jordan's level in that race. As trivial as it might be, and as often as the MVP doesn't always make sense. You know, the fact that some guys haven't won more, you know, Shaquille O'Neal pops to mind, you know.
Well, Steve Nash kind of stole his MVP.
Totally stole a couple from Shaquille O'Neal when he was clearly the most dominant player in the league.
When he was on, it was gross. Yeah. Like, people forget about that because Shaq's become more of a character than anything else. Kind of like Barkley in a way. Like, when Barkley was really on his game, It was like Jordan, and then you could argue it was Barkley.
Yeah.
And, you know, Shaq is just this bigger-than-life kind of personality, and with the movies and the rap, and now he's obviously on the panel. But when Shaq was, like, in the mood and ready to play, he was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like, he was 30, 20, and 10 for fun. You know, like, it was fun for
him. And if they would have called fouls on him correctly or against him correctly, you know, he'd still be shooting free throws.
And if he could shoot free throws, his numbers would even be more off the charts.
Yeah, and so for him to have only won one in his career, you know, it goes to show you that you can't. The guy was the most dominant player in the league for a long span there, and he only won one MVP, which tells you something about the MVP award. The MVP award becomes a storyline award a lot of the time. Like, what's happened? What's happened to this team, and how is this team faring with this guy injected into it is a lot of the thing, and that's why LeBron, I think, has a great argument
for it. Great case to be made.
It's being
sure.
built. I don't think it's done yet, because I think the Lakers could still take a step back here.
Well, I think, you know, one of the more fascinating cases of, you know, jockeying for position in terms of the narrative is taking place in the NFL, and another chapter was written last night.
Yeah.
Because 3 weeks ago, Drew Brees had already locked up the MVP. It was over.
Yep.
And now he's played three games in a row where he hasn't played very well. Last night, he just couldn't. They scored 12 points.
It's
they
amazing.
Won the game. But now all of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, it's Mahomes or Rivers. And Brees is like in the three hole, you know. And it's just every week it feels like something else is happening and you can kind of poke holes in it. But for the longest time, you know, Brees, because he has never won an MVP, and he put up spectacular numbers earlier in the season, but it became a lifetime achievement award for him.
Yes.
Like, this is the great Drew Brees who, because he had to play when Manning and Brady and Rodgers were going, this is his chance. If he puts up anything close to kind of top two or three numbers in the league in terms of quarterbacking, we'll give it to him. But now he's slipping.
Totally.
You know, three games in a row, he slipped. And he's got a couple more. And if he keeps putting up numbers like that, even if they end up with the top seed in the NFC, and it feels like they will after last night, I don't know how you can't just give it to him.
It's not I think Mahomes may be back in the driver's seat.
Although, I think he is.
And you know, it's tough to say, but it's amazing how quickly things can change. Like, the Rams looked like this juggernaut, and suddenly, you know, they're 11-3. It looked like they might never lose. This league is funny that way. Like, it's, you know, the idea that the Saints put up 12 points last night against a Carolina team that frankly is not that good. I mean, you know, a 6-8 Carolina team or something.
They've really struggled recently too.
And Newton's not what he was, and you know, nobody was calling their defense a juggernaut either. you know, it's such a coin flip league so often. That's why, you know, that's why it's so much fun to try and bet it and try and be in pools on it. But you're slapping your palm to your forehead going, how did I miss? How did I not see this coming?
Yeah, you are going to get burned. It's inevitable. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, is going to be in studio at 4:30. We're going to revisit some of the things that Kyle Dubas said yesterday and a couple things that came out of the Pierre LeBrun piece in The Athletic today, including a bit of an artificial timeline on the Matthews and Marner contracts that I don't think we're exposing anything that isn't realistic in terms of how he wants to approach the trade deadline, but he feels like he's got to get some other work done first.
You think?
The clock is ticking. Definitely feels that way. So we'll tell you about that, and we'll get Bob McKenzie in studio next. All right, Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider, is going to join us in studio here in just a moment. Got the TVs up in here. Dave Festrek from the Star is in. And there's a show up on ESPN. I was reading about this story earlier. There's an Indian soccer player playing in the Indian Soccer League. Did you hear about this?
I saw this.
This guy claimed that he was 16 years old. He had a full mustache at 16. And I guess he was the youngest scorer in the Indian Soccer League's history. So it was very triumphant. And it was big news over there that this guy at 16, this phenom, found a way to score against all these men.
How did he do it?
And then it turns out he's actually 28. He's 28, and now he's suspended for 6 months, which I think is an egregious misstep. Because personally, if you can pull this off, I have to support it. And anyone that allowed him to get away with claiming he was 16, they should be suspended for 6 months.
Very true.
Anyone that gullible and that stupid, you should be suspended for 6 months.
Seriously. Like, it's the analytics versus the eye test. Well, the eye test usually tells you something's not right.
Something doesn't add up here.
Like, that 5 o'clock shadow is popping in at 2 o'clock here. Like, there's something not right about that.
Like, beautiful mustache. Like, this thing had been groomed for years. this guy's 16.
Even the swarthiest of Mediterranean's that I've met over the years, the guys who hit puberty at like 6 don't have mustaches like that by 16.
No. And like this, I can't even believe being that gullible. Like, imagine writing that down in the record books that this guy, 16 years old, just scored a goal.
It's a huge problem.
And you actually believe that it's true.
It's a huge problem in international sport, though, Hayes. Like, fake passports are not that expensive. And guys looking for an edge. There's all kinds of rumors about various players that have come over from Africa and places where you can buy papers, you know, where maybe the regulations and the bureaucracy isn't as you know, ironclad mm-hmm. as it is over here, or we like to think it is over here. And, you know, if you could buy an advantage, wouldn't a few years or 12 years be a nice advantage to have in your life?
Well, yeah, I guess so. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if he was good enough to play pro at 28, like, why do you have to pretend to be 16? He made the team, because and he was playing, and he scored. He's good enough to score a goal.
That's the thing. Like, he probably should have just said, 12 years? Why don't I dial that back? Like,
yeah.
If you would have done it, like, 3 years, you'd still have a huge advantage, right?
Yeah, I'm a late bloomer.
Yeah.
Like, you could still be a late bloomer.
If you said you were 25, people would, you'd still have, you know, plenty of athletic lifespan left.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. I kind of enjoy these stories because I don't know if it's really harmful, you know. I think it's really creepy and weird when you see, you know, like 28-year-olds go back to high school and stuff like that.
That's
like,
happened.
It happens all the time. It happens in Ontario all the time. It just happened in Windsor.
Yeah,
like
the Windsor kid.
Year.
I was just thinking
some
of that story.
Yeah, he's 28. He's driving around in a minivan, and he's like, yeah, I'm in high school. Like,
getting a lot of scholarship interest.
Yeah, that's some creepy stuff. But this is pro, and I don't know. Here's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. What's up, Bob?
Hello, fellas.
How's it feel to be back in Toronto?
Maybe I should go to high school.
Think you could get? You think you could pass as a high school student?
Oh, sure.
A little Grecian formula?
Exactly. Why, my hair gray?
No, man.
I didn't notice.
Never. Well, we were talking about this story in India where I guess a 28-year-old was posing as a 16-year-old, and he scored, and somehow people were gullible enough to believe it. He had a full mustache at 16. Any stories of that in the NHL, in the history of the NHL?
Well, for the longest time, there were, especially with some Russian players, that, like... I think it was Mikhail Gregorenko when he played in the Quebec League. The running joke was that he was like, you know, 3 or 4 years older, and you know, who knows? I just kind of take that stuff with a grain of salt, but it happens from time to time where somebody seems a lot older, especially when they're younger, but no biggie.
Well, it can be deceptive. Like, I played with kids where, like, I was, you know, when I was 12 or 13, these kids had blown through puberty.
Oh, yeah.
Like, blown through it. And it's like, well, what are you going to do? They're my age. I've been playing against them since we were five.
Well, that's why they raised the body contact age, right, a couple years ago to basically 13 now, right? I mean, because, guy, there's just such a disparity with some kids are just boys and some are men by 13, 14.
Yeah, it's nuts.
No, it is crazy.
It is.
I remember that. Minor peewee when I was a kid. So what age would that be, minor peewee? Is that
13,
like
13, 12, right? 12, 13.
12, 13. Depends. Yeah. They switched the years a couple of times.
Yeah. I think that's when we implemented hitting back when I was a kid.
Yeah, they moved it up a year. They moved it up a year because of that.
To peewee.
To peewee.
Yeah. Which still is still pretty young. I mean, when you think about it. But anyway, Bob McKenzie in studio. So Kyle Dubas spoke with the media yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And Pierre LeBrun had a sit down with him. And I found it very interesting in LeBrun's piece where it felt to me, and I don't know if you read it this way, but when asked about his plans for the trade deadline, Dubas effectively said, well, we'd like to get Matthews and Marner signed before then.
Right.
So we know what our numbers are looking like because we'd prefer to avoid a rental. We'd like to bring on somebody with term.
Yeah.
Did you read it the same way?
I think so. And listen, it's not entirely in your control to get the contracts done by the deadline, but if you could, that would be great. Takes two to tango, or in this case, three, I guess. So you need some help there. But it would give you a much clearer indication of what you can or can't do. And there's going to be a balancing act. I mean, if you're going to bring in a defenseman who has term on the contract, who's got a fixed value right now, you're going to have to figure out what Marner and Matthews are going to be getting. Then you've got to figure out, okay, so what are we? You have to give up something. We're getting to the point at some point where if there's somebody coming in at X number of dollars, then X number of dollars need to be going out, or the projection of what you think X number of dollars would be. So I speak, of course, of Kasperi Kapanen or Andreas Johnsson or Connor Brown. You know, something's got to give somewhere. If you're going to add a significant piece on the blue line, you're likely going to need to lose a significant piece up front. And say by significant piece, I don't obviously mean Marner or Matthews.
Well, that's and so that's the interesting thing here, Bob. When you think about it, I mean, it seems to me as though if I'm Kyle Dubas, I feel like I'm playing poker against two agents here, right? And they keep getting cards slipped to them under the table. And I'm sitting here with the same hand. Like, it's not getting better for me as time clicks along because Marner keeps lighting it up, and Matthews' value is not going to go down. I mean, there's no way it's going down. So it seems to me like it's been like this since the offseason. The longer you wait, the higher the price tag, and therefore, why has he waited so long?
Well, I think you had to get Nylander done first, and because it ended up being problematic, it stretched out. And let's be honest, I mean, the players, ultimately, as I said, it takes two to tango. So, you know, Marner, I think, has made it abundantly clear to the Leafs, I want to go last. And I think probably Matthews has probably said, I'd like to go last.
Right.
Well, as the great philosopher once said, if everybody's going last, then no one's going first. and nobody's going to get done then. So, and here's what it really boils down to is you can... The price is going up, but at some point it doesn't matter if the price is going up, because if they want to stay in Toronto, and that's up to them to make that decision, if they want to stay in Toronto, they can't get market value. They can't.
What if they wait to July 1 and the offer sheets roll in? Then the market value will be pretty high.
Well, yeah, although, I mean, you know, I'll believe it when I see it on offer sheets.
Sure.
I understand everybody in Toronto, and I kind of laughed at Dubas, and he's right. The only team that ever gets talked about is getting an offer sheet thrown out. Like, why wouldn't you offer sheet the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you offer sheet Line A or Connor? Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you go after
Braden Point?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Braden Point's probably going to end up with better numbers than either Marner or Matthews. Yep.
And Tampa's in a worse cap situation.
And yeah, so, like, there's, you know... I have a funny feeling, and nobody's spent too much time talking about Braden Point's offer sheet. So fair enough. And the flip side is, if you are the Leafs, if let's say you did, someone did offer sheet you on one of those guys, what's to stop you from going and offer sheeting somebody else?
Right.
I was looking, I was curious because everybody was saying offer sheets, Toronto Maple Leafs. And I'm like, I wonder if the Leafs are positioned okay to go out and present an offer sheet to somebody. Not that they'd want to because they've got Marner and Matthews, but let's assume for a moment they wanted to. Let's assume for a moment they decided, yeah, you know what? Braden Point's a good player. Tampa's in a vulnerable spot. Let's ding them up. So I look, they got their first, second, third round picks for multiple years in the future. They're well stocked with all their own draft picks, which is the currency you need for an offer sheet. So the Leafs, in my mind, the Leafs are almost as likely to give an offer sheet as to get one.
That'd be the ultimate trump card, man. That'd be so funny if everyone's so panicked about Matthews and Marner, and then they sign those two, and then they offer sheet.
Well, they
like,
wouldn't. They wouldn't obviously. They wouldn't.
Well,
have
then.
Enough.
No, I was going to say that's. I mean, that's to me. Yeah, I know what you're saying, Bob. But you can fight fire with fire. There's no doubt you can do it. But my thing is, if I'm the agents for both those guys, I'm sitting there going, if it gets to an offer sheet, it gets to an offer sheet.
But here's the thing.
But here's the thing with an offer sheet: you got to want to sign it.
Right.
Yeah.
So and you got to explain yourself if you sign it.
And at the end of the day, you know, you got to decide where you want to play. Well, fair enough. And that's their their right as a restricted free agent. If they get an offer sheet, they can decide whether to sign it or not. You know, and in the pie in the sky, you know, thing that's always talked about is Arizona would come in with a 1 year deal, max deal for Matthews. You know,
20% like of the cap,
16 or 18 or 20 million, whatever the case, whatever the max of the cap is, and what have you. So, I mean, you know, then it's up to management how they're going to put 20 pounds of you know what in a 10 pound bag. And hard decisions get made, but, you know, I suspect they're probably not about to lose somebody in an offer sheet. But back to my original point, at some point, the players have to decide, do I want to play here or do I want to play elsewhere? So, you know, the other pie in the sky one was Lou Lamoriello's revenge for losing the job to Kyle Dubas will be to come in and at the same time Arizona comes in with the pie in the sky max offer to Austin Matthews, the Islanders come in with a max with a big number for Mitch Marner, Lou's revenge, so to speak. Well, if that's the case, if that's what Marner wants, then he's got to want to play in Long Island. And do you really at this? So if you want the money, there's going to be places probably better than Toronto in terms of the options for both guys.
Yeah.
If you want to play in Toronto together with, you know, Matthews and Nylander and Marner and Tavares and with this group in this city, and for Marner it's a little different because it's hometown, then you got to decide how much of a haircut you're prepared to take. It's just simple cap economics. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know.
No. Well, that side of it doesn't get brought up enough. The onus that is on the player as well, and the explanation that would have to come with it. You know, you can't just come back and be like, oh, no, guys, I knew the Leafs were going to match, and it was just about me. No, you'd have to stand in front of the media and explain why you wanted to leave. And that's not comfortable. And that's why I think, you know, this is probably getting blown a little bit out of proportion because I don't think these players want to be in that position.
But I don't think Dubas does either.
No,
I don't
of course
think
not.
Dubas, of course he does. That's why he wants to get it done, preferably before the trade deadline.
For
but
sure.
Certainly before July 1. And my attitude on offer sheets is that they could happen. But I said this a number of places this past week. When Mark Stone didn't get offer sheeted this summer, I said, that's it. The offer sheet is dead. Because Mark Stone was 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. If anybody gave an offer sheet on Mark Stone and he signed it, the Ottawa Senators could either take the draft picks or they could match it. If they match it, they can't trade him.
Right.
It was the perfect storm to get Mark Stone out of Ottawa for just draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you'd have to take it on faith that you could sign him long term if you got him. Otherwise, you'd be giving up some significant draft picks for a one-year rental. But the beauty of it was, because Mark Stone's a year away from unrestricted free agency and the rules are, for a team, if you match an offer sheet, you can't trade the guy for a year. So Ottawa would be sitting there with a guy who's going to free agency at the end of the year, and they don't know if they can get him signed or not. they got it. They I don't think they could have matched that. They'd be taking too big a chance.
Yeah.
Walk out the door for nothing.
Speaking of Ottawa, Eugene Melnyk has been countersued by Dr. Evil.
Only $1 billion.
$1 billion by Dr. Evil, his, I guess, business partner, because he sued, I don't remember the guy's name, but $700 million or something. It's all about the rink downtown.
Yeah, Ottawa.
But this is getting ugly, isn't it, Bob? Like,
well, yeah, from the moment that Melnyk fired the legal salvo at that at the other entity, you knew it was coming back, and it was fait accompli that there was going to be a countersuit. So it's not ideal. I don't know where that one ends up. The NHL's kind of watching with interest, and there's plenty of time for it to get sorted out one way or another. But it's not an ideal or optimal situation. But seldom things are in Ottawa.
Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider in studio. We didn't talk about this yesterday, but Corey Crawford's out with another concussion.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Is he closing? I mean, it's tough to
get a read on this, but
is he going to play again?
Don't know. You know, and there's always this. I mean, we went through this with Sid. You know, there was a period of time where everybody said, "Oh, he might be done."
Yeah.
And when he came back, and I think it was a Krejci accidentally elbow in the back of the head type thing, and he was out again, and everybody said, "That's it. You know, he should really shut it down." Well, he shouldn't really shut it down, because everybody's got to make hard decisions on what they do, but you get a medical opinion and then you make your decision. But it's really unfortunate that Corey Crawford banged his head off, back of his head off the post in that game, because we know what enormous problems he's had over the past year with concussions, and so all you can do is hope that it doesn't end up as symptomatic as it was before, and that he ends up in a better place in a quicker period of time. But you just never know with these things, and until then, you just reserve all judgment, and you know, you espouse the, it's a cliche, I guess, but it's true, and because most cliches are rooted in truth, and you're more worried about the guy than the hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, what do you make of Philly, Bob? I mean, we see that situation handled the way it was, even though Dave Haxtell comes out and says the Flyers were first class. I mean, the chain of events seemed as though there was some miscommunication or discord within the club. I don't know if that's a perception or the truth. How do you see it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Chuck Fletcher went in there and said, "I'm going to give him an opportunity." They went on a road trip. Things didn't go well. They lost one game 5-1. They lost another game 7-1. There was another game where they were protecting a lead and they lost it. So Fletcher clearly saw a disconnect between what Hextall was preaching and what the players were practicing. And so he was obviously concerned enough that he was going to make a move. And what happens is, in an organization, is I think most times when a coach is getting relieved of his duties, from the day that it gets announced to when the decision was made was probably it can be anything 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days.
Right.
You know, you got to start putting a plan together for what you're going to do. There's a whole bunch of things you need to put in place. And my guess, based on the way the media reporting went, is that somebody in the Flyer organization was sort of talking what the intention was before Chuck Fletcher was prepared to make, even though the decision may have been made, he wasn't prepared to actually make the move.
Is that including the Quinville element to all this?
Well, I'm not sure on the Quinville element, because, you know, that one is a little more basic. And Chuck Fletcher said very publicly, and our understanding, the Blackhawks basically have suggested nobody's asked us for permission to talk to Joel Quenville.
Right.
So if somebody was talking to Joel Quenville, they didn't have permission. And therefore, they wouldn't be in a position, nobody be in a position to offer or accept any sort of anything that was going on. I don't doubt for a moment that, and the other thing is that was noteworthy that Chuck said was, Scott Gordon's the guy, as of now, our feeling is he's the guy for the balance of the season. Interim head coach, balance of the season. I wouldn't doubt for a moment, and I said this from the moment Chuck Fletcher was hired, if he decides to make a coaching change, there was no doubt in my mind he'd be swinging for the fences on, you know, it's Philadelphia. So what's Philadelphia? Philadelphia's got a lot of money. That's not, you know, there's no small market concerns. There's nobody worried about how much we're going to pay our coach. Whatever it takes is the Philly mentality on that front. And they've got enough good young players on the way that, you know, a coach may look favorably on a situation like that. But that'll be up to Joel to decide. But I don't doubt at some point in time that the Flyers will look for the home run ball, and Quenneville will be the home run ball. You know, Todd McLellan might be at a double or a triple in relative terms. Mm-hmm. So whoever the best people are out there, I sound like Donald Trump now, we're going to get the best people.
People are saying.
Then Chuck Fletcher and the Philadelphia Flyers will be angling to get those people. And obviously Joel's the front and center guy. I would think Joel probably doesn't want to coach until next season, but anything's up for debate and discussion. And but first things first, they got to ask for permission to talk to him, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Leafs Devils tonight. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6:30 on TSN 4 tonight. Bob, we'll see you on the panel. Good luck without the O-Dog. It won't be the same without him on the panel
tonight.
Yeah, I don't
even want to ask where he is.
He's in Toronto, so he's probably literally 15 minutes away from here.
Yeah, he's had this one booked for a while. It must be Christmas shopping or something.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. He literally called in yesterday to the show because he was sitting at home listening to us carve him. And he's like, I got to call
him. Oh, is he off the whole week?
Yeah, he's gone the whole week.
Oh, he's done. So
yeah, well, he's prepping for the World
Juniors.
He's
on Christmas vacation. Yeah, I saw him in Victoria.
That's right. He was in Switzerland yesterday. He's just, you know, international man of mystery, the O-Dog.
Where are you based in Vancouver, Bob? Are you guys just hanging out down in the harbor there? Or?
Yeah, no, we're downtown. It's downtown. A good spot. Real good spot.
It'd be a
Looking
good tournament.
Forward to it.
This
should
be a fun one. All right, Bob.
Thanks.
We'll see you, man. There's Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. He'll be in studio later in the week. And the World Juniors right around the corner. As always, you can watch every game on TSN here, every Canadian game right here on TSN 1050. All right, race coming up in the next hour. We'll get into Nick Nurse being fined $15,000. Big game tomorrow night. Raptors at home against Indiana. Overdrive is a pair of tickets to see the Leafs take on the Canucks January 5th down at Scotiabank. And every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. And on Friday, you can call in and name that Leaf, and you're going to see the game. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf has played 369 games with Toronto. This Maple Leaf has played 369 games with the Maple Leafs. Leafs in jersey tonight. Taylor Hall is going to return tonight. Reigning MVP. Should probably strike more fear. Like, Taylor Hall is a great player.
He really
had an unbelievable season last year. But you talk about one-offs. I don't see him winning, you know, I don't even see him winning a second MVP in his career.
No.
I just don't, with McDavid running the way that he runs. And
that was absolutely a one-off. I mean, he's still having a good year. He's a point-of-game guy.
He's a great player.
He's a point-of-game guy, but he just got, he was on fire.
It was the perfect storm where that team was, you know, bottom five the year before. No one else on his team was even close in terms of points.
That was the linchpin argument that, you know, what was it? I forget, the spread was incredible. It was 93-52, so 41 points from Hall to Nico Hischier as the second Devil on the scoring list. So it just wasn't going to happen. Like, that was just the argument that just said, you talk about most valuable, that speaks to value.
Exactly. We'll get back into our poll question, the hotly contested poll question on Twitter today. We'll get to that. Fest Truck's in here. Ray Ferraro coming up. Leafs Devils tonight. We'll tee it up. Overdrive continues on the TSN app.
This hour of Overdrive was powered by The Source. For expert advice on the very best holiday gifts, visit The Source and chat with one of their tech experts.